So Far from the Bamboo Grove by Yoko Kawashima Watkins. Chapter 8. Ko rearranged our rucksacks. In my rucksack, she put all the papers, and in hers, the mess kits, 5 canteens, eating utensils, matches, and candles. She gave me both of these to carry while she toted the huge wrapping cloth bundle. "Well, let's go to school," she said. "We'll meet right here beneath the station clock." When I entered the classroom, a girl called out, "You brought 2 rucksacks for trash?" This time I talked back, "What's wrong with that?" Everyone laughed. I remembered what Ko had said and decided to pay no attention, but deep inside I wanted to beat that girl up. The trash man had not burned the trash when I showed up after school. I conversed with him very slowly. I told him Kyoto was much warmer than Northern Korea. He asked about Nanam. I was speaking so slowly that our conversation took a long time, but he seemed to enjoy it, and for the first time I saw him smile. A few days later, when I ran to the furnace room, he was not there. I was busy picking out papers when he tapped me on the back. "Saved them for you from the trash. Thought you can use them." He handed me a compass, scissors, a slide rule, and a dictionary. "Oh, thank you very much," I spoke so slowly. "Now I have to make a good grade." "You a fine girl," he said. I noticed that the words, "are fine," had come smoothly from his lips. "I will see you tomorrow," I said, wanting to hear his response. "Sayonara," he said very slowly but smoothly. "Sayonara," I answered in the same way. All the way to the station, my heart was skipping and hopping with happiness. Not only did I have a friend, but he was speaking almost normally. I couldn't wait to tell Ko. Father was right. If everyone would speak to that man slowly, he would get over his stuttering. On my 5th morning, as I entered the classroom, all the girls were gathered at the bulletin board. I went to see what they were looking at, and they scattered as they saw me with my 2 rucksacks. On the board was a huge drawing of me with my rucksacks, picking up trash in the furnace room. Under the drawing was writing, "Democratic system. Prestigious Sagano accepts trash picker as student." This did it. I would not spend another day in this class. Then there was a shout. The trash man. "Goddamn girls," he yelled, and he did not stutter. He pulled off the drawing and tore it to pieces. "Go to your class," he told me, and still he spoke smoothly. And in spite of my anguish, I smiled at him. I was so happy at the way he spoke. "Keep smiling," he said, and went away. I managed the classes that day. In the furnace room, I stayed a little longer to talk with my friend, as this was to be my last day. Riding back to the station, I wondered how I was going to tell Ko that I would not go to school anymore. I was glad she was not waiting under the clock. It was 5 o'clock and a train pulled in, letting off many commuters on their way home. How I envied them. I have no home, I thought. No father, no brother, and right now, no mother. Just a big sister who is strong and rough and sometimes very bossy. Still, she loves me. When we did not find much food in the garbage, she gave me most of it, saying my little dumb brain would not function without food, and winter winds would blow me away. Ko was coming now, walking fast and carrying our heaviest bundle. She leaned forward as she walked, and I thought she looked just like Father. He always looked down, thinking, as he strolled in the garden. Ko spotted me. "Have you waited long? Let's go get some food." As we walked toward the alley for our supper and breakfast supplies, I still did not know how to tell her. "I've had an idea," Ko said. "I'll be coming back to the station a couple of hours later now. So you do your homework, and I'll get our food on my way home. That will save time." "What's your idea? Why are you going to be late?" I asked. "I have things to do at school. Don't ask questions." I could not tell her my decision, and I dragged myself back to school. Somehow the days passed, and I endured. Then it was Friday, and Mother would be back. I asked Ko if I could skip school. "No," she said. "School is paid for, and you can't waste a day." I could hardly wait for school to be over. No matter what scorn was poured on me, the thought of Mother made me so happy I seemed to be walking all day on silky clouds. I ran to the furnace room to gather my papers. I ran to the streetcar. The car was not running fast enough. I ran to the station building, my eyes seeking Mother. She was there, sitting alone, caped with her blanket. She looked lonesome and so tiny. "Welcome back," I called, running. "I missed you." She looked up and smiled. How pale she was, her lips white. "I missed you too, terribly." I squeezed in between her and a lady next to her. "Are you all right?" I asked. "A bit dizzy. Tired, I guess." She was breathing hard. "How are our grandparents?" Mother shook her head weakly. "Destroyed. Everything gone." She paused. "My parents and your father's parents were all killed in the July bombing. I could hardly take it in. "What?" I said slowly. "Are we going to do now?" I had thought we would go to grandmother's and be cared for. "I don't know." She seemed to breathe with difficulty. "I put up our land for sale, and I left your sister's school address at the town hall if they hear from Hideo or father." She was crying. "Isn't your sister late?" She closed her eyes. The lady got up, and I slid over to give mother more room. She lay down and put her head in my lap. "Wake me when your sister comes." Suddenly, I felt grown up. Suddenly, I knew I must protect mother. I wiggled out of my overcoat and covered her slender shoulders. Ko was carrying the blankets and the wrapping cloth. Why didn't she come? "Little one," mother said, "I'm thirsty." I pulled out a canteen and flew to the well. "Mother's ill, mother's ill." I dunked the canteen in the well, wanting it to fill fast. I raced back. She raised her head and drank. "Ah, thanks, it tastes good." She lay down again. "I wish Ko would come." She was panting. She'll come," I told her. "She's getting us some food." My eyes searched the crowd of people streaming through the station, wishing that Ko had not had that idea, whatever it was, that kept her 2 hours. Mother was speaking, her voice faint. "Little one, is she coming?" "Any minute, Honorable Mother." Hang on to the wrapping cloth. Hang on." Mother's head slipped to one side and her right arm dropped, and she was still. I knew. I screamed, "Mother! She's gone! Mother is gone!" I kept on screaming and crying. People gathered around us, and the police took my name and asked questions. Mother's name, her age, her hometown. The doctor had come to pronounce Mother dead when Ko finally arrived. She could not believe it. What had happened? What had Mother been doing? What had she said? I answered, sobbing, and told her how much Mother had wanted to see her. "I wished you were not staying in school those extra hours." Ko knelt beside Mother. She pushed back Mother's hair. She bit her lips tightly and tried not to show tears, but she could not hold them back. Then she burst out, "You made it all the way from Nanam. Why now? Why now?" She threw herself over Mother and wept. Then she grabbed a mess kit full of food and slammed it down on the concrete floor. The lid burst open and the food scattered. Bystanders, beggars, orphans, station dwellers quickly squatted down to feast. The police telephoned a funeral service and 2 men came. They asked Ko what type of casket we wanted. Ko said we had no money, but was there some way we could cremate the body? They said they could put the body on a pine board and take it to a crematorium. "How much?" Ko asked. 20 yen in advance. Ko looked in Mother's pouch and counted bills, trying not to let the money be seen. Somehow, I did not like the attitude of the 2 men, and I told Ko in Korean that they might be cheating us. Ko nodded. 20 yen is too high," Ko said. "A pine board doesn't cost that much." "Gasoline and use of the truck," said the man. "The truck consumes much gas and oil." "How far to the crematorium?" "Very far, about 1.5 hours. Ko was figuring. "What kind of truck do you have?" "A Datsun." "A Datsun doesn't consume much gas and oil. 20 yen is too high." "Are you going to pay us in advance or not?" the man asked. "You bring your truck with the pine board, deliver us to the crematorium, and I'll pay you." "No way," said the funeral service man. "Well, I'll just have to call the city hall," said Ko. "They'll help us for free." The men headed for the exit, but one returned. "We'll take you to the crematorium," he said. The policeman chased all the people around us away, and he stayed near us. Ko and I wiped Mother's face with a damp cloth and combed her hair for our farewell. We were both sobbing. Mother was wearing her wartime national clothes, and Ko checked all the hidden pockets. She found some bills and coins, also Mother's identification slip showing that she was a refugee from Korea. I put them in my rucksack. Then Ko drew the precious sword from between Mother's breasts and slipped it against her own chest. She checked Mother's socks. There was a hole in one, and she slipped it off and put it on one of her own. Then she brought Mother's hands together against her breasts. It was then that a lady approached us. She was not a station dweller, but she was a familiar face, for she came to the station every day. We had never spoken to each other. "I am Mrs. Masuda," she introduced herself. "I'm sorry about your mother. Is there anything I can do to help you?" "We are waiting for the truck," Ko told her. "May I come with you to the crematorium?" asked Mrs. Masuda. "I have been watching you ever since you arrived. I wondered where your mother went." "She went north to settle a few things," Ko answered. "Mother would be glad if you would come with us." "There is a crematorium very near here," Mrs. Masuda told Ko. "You do not have to ride for 1.5 hours. "But aren't you waiting for someone?" Ko asked. "I have been waiting for my niece from Seoul, but she was not on the last train. I am on my way home." When the truck came, the men lifted Mother to the board and slid it onto the pickup. Ko and I threw in our belongings and jumped in. Mrs. Masuda ordered the driver to go to the Higashiyama crematory, only a 20-minute drive, and when we arrived there, she paid 5 yen to the driver. The man in charge of the crematorium was kind. He and his helpers carried Mother on the board and slid it carefully into the mouth of the furnace. Cremation is different in Japan. We were told we could light the fire if we wished. I cried and held on to Mrs. Masuda, but Ko courageously lit the fire at the mouth of the furnace. The flames spread quickly. I could not look. She will be ready in the morning, said the man. You may select an urn now. But Ko said we would bring an urn for our beloved mother. Ko, Mrs. Masuda, and I walked back to the station. As I went down the hill, I looked back. Twilight was fading and the smoke rose slowly, spreading into the sky. Ko carried the wrapping cloth bundle, I carried the two rucksacks, and Mrs. Masuda held my hand as we walked, wordless. Mrs. Masuda broke the silence. Do you have a place to go? No, said Ko, but my little sister and I would like to stay in the city for 6 months. She explained about school. Mrs. Masuda told us that she and her husband owned a Smogida, a clog factory on the west side of town, and their warehouse had been robbed. She would be delighted if we would go there to stay and watch things. Your schools would be much closer, she said. Ko thanked her and said we would like to go tomorrow after we claimed Mother's ashes. Then I shall go to the station to meet you, our new friend said. Strangely, this offer of a home did not excite us much. In our grief, nothing else seemed to matter, and it had begun to seem normal to live in stations. We did not sleep that night. Morning was bright. Ko told me to wash Mother's mess kit and dry it well. It will be Mother's urn, she said. When the clock struck 9, we carried our belongings and headed toward the crematorium. As I said, cremation is different in Japan, and not all of the body was destroyed. With chopsticks brought all the way from Nanam, we gently placed the small remains of Mother's bones in her mess kit. I sobbed, "Oh, Mother!" Then Ko paid the price for cremation, and we carried the mess kit urn away. On the way to the station, we stopped at a small temple and asked a monk to say a prayer for our dead. But the monk, wrapped in his sacred black and white daily robes, stared at us and said sharply, "I have no time." He slammed the fusuma panel and vanished. I held Mother's urn close to my breast. "Damn monk," Ko shouted. "A Buddhist monk should practice nothing but love. He's doing a fine job." I made up my mind that I would never step into a Buddhist temple as long as I lived. Mrs. Masuda took us to the warehouse. It was beside the streetcar tracks. A path connected it with the factory, and a stream ran behind it. Upstairs was a 4-tatami mat room, with a small window and a bare light bulb hanging from the ceiling. She said we could cook outside and use all the scraps of wood from the factory. The room has not been cleaned for ages, she said, and she lent us a broom and bucket and rags. Ko and I went to work. We removed cobwebs from corners. I washed the window while Ko swept the mats and wiped them with a damp cloth. We scrubbed the stairway and swept the entrance. When we had finished, we went to the stream to wash our hands and faces. Then we made a simple altar for Mother in our room. We folded her bath towel and rested the mess kit urn on it. While I filled Mother's canteen at the stream, Ko broke small branches from a bright maple tree and we arranged them in the canteen. Together we offered it on Mother's altar. Then Ko placed Mother's short sword in front of the urn and we bowed deeply to Mother's ashes. I asked her to watch over Ko and me.